I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got no way to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Ah. Plantain, plantain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, your weekend review edition. This is your host, Dean, and I am here as always with my co-host, the hardest working man in the podcasting industry. Coach, what to do?
Oh. Look, man, Arsenal beat the snot out of Liverpool again.
Hi-yo.
I can't have... This weekend has been great, in fact. Spent time with my family. You know what I mean? It's been great. Yeah, I mean, smoked Liverpool. Did I say that already?
Nah, man. Say it one more time. What you say?
We beat the living dog shit out of Liverpool this weekend, bro.
Crazy, man. However you want to judge that shit. XG, goals, you know, fist pumps, whatever the fuck you want to judge it by. Fuck Jamie Carragher. Just real quick. I just want to say that. We all know what professional jealousy looks like. You niggas hating because you're not Mikel Arteta. That's basically what it is at this point. Because the pettiness
Let's save it for the Premier League section.
Okay. Well, on that note, let's start in France. Ligue 1, baby. Yeah. Lyon versus Marseille in the battle of the Olympics and the battle of former bum-ass Arsenal strikers. And Lyon won. Somehow they won. I don't know how they did this, but they won. Alex Lacazette scored too.
Yeah, he scored. He scored. And Angie Maitland-Niles started as well. So it was very much an Arsenal derby. In fact, all three of those players all made their debuts under Arsene Wenger.
Incredible. Good for Lyon, man. It's a rare victory for them. They haven't done a lot of that this year, Coach.
Listen, man. Just so I'm clear, did the transfer of thingy of my man go through? The West Ham fella. I'm pretty sure. I think it went through in the end, didn't it?
Honestly, I don't know why they make a big deal out of this. Like, if one team wants a player and the other team wants to get rid of the player, just let it happen. Nobody fucking cares that someone didn't file a fucking fax on time, or just get rid of the motherfuckers, man.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm pretty sure in the end it did go through from what I...
Well, we'll find out and tell these people later.
Yeah, it's cool. But, look, Lyon are doing better than they were at the beginning of the season, but...
That's not hard.
Yeah, but, I mean, look... They just brought in Matic. I'm sorry, I just can't. It's making me laugh because it's like he seems to be around for so long, yet he's only, and I say only 35. You know,
hey man, you know athletes are playing longer these days. You know, better technology, more rest. You know, everything's just better, so it's easier to play longer. But that doesn't mean he's been good. He hasn't been able to run since his final year at Chelsea.
Yeah,
and that was before he went to United. And now he spent some time in, I believe, Reims, is it?
Yeah.
You know, and he didn't like it because they didn't have the right international school for his kids or whatever. So now he's in Lyon, and he's there. They also got Aurel Mangala from Nottingham Forest over the break as well, in addition to this maybe Benrahma or not thing. So, like you said at the beginning of the season, Coach, they're not going to get relegated. But they were cutting it close for a while there.
Yeah, they suck. And one of my favorite players, Unahi, back from the AFCON because he got shipped out.
Last question before we move on, Coach. If in a 1v1 shootout between Lacazette and Aubameyang, which one are you relying on? If you had to bet your life on one of them scoring a goal in a big game, which one is it?
Oh man. Oh man.
This is not that hard to answer, man. You're a prick. It's Lacazette, you prick. Come on. Act like you didn't watch Aubameyang fumble in big games for year after. Then he had that nice run in the FA Cup. Then we pretended he was always clutch. He was never clutch. Lacazette was way more clutch, just scored way fewer goals.
I can accept that.
All right. I got my agenda off. I'm happy. All right. Brest hosted Nice. And this game was much less entertaining than the name suggested. It was not a nice game, but... Shout out Brest. 0-0 that one ended. Strasbourg hosted PSG, the league leaders, and somehow PSG escaped with a win in this game. They definitely should have lost. Mm-hmm. Uncle Paddy's team definitely battered them, but they could only score one of their 8 shots on target. versus the goals from Mbappe, as always, and Marco Asensio.
I think Mbappe is going to break his record this season. I think his record is 41 in all comps, and I think he's on 29 so far.
You might be the only motherfucker alive that cares about that, to be honest. Nobody cares about this month. Like, bro, I mean, we heard the rumor this weekend the first time in a while, because we've heard these rumors every winter, every summer for the past couple of years, but we got some more credible seeming rumors from Le Parisien saying that he's definitely going to Real Madrid this summer and that he'll be giving up €100 million bonus to do so from PSG. I'm choosing to believe it. Not that it matters one way or the other, but it's time, right, Coach?
Yeah, for sure, for sure, for sure.
All right, good.
Just quickly before we move on, though, because it seems as if this is the renaissance of the young midfield maestros. We're talking about Mainoo and whatnot, but Zaire Emery has been doing this, you know, a little bit longer than Mainoo, despite being younger. I want to ask you, where do you rank him genuinely with the young midfielders? Is he the one, or is it Mainoo?
This is hard. I think it's, for the moment, it feels like it's almost obviously Zaire Emery, because one, he's been doing it longer, he's been capped by his national team already. And on top of that, I think the main thing Mainoo is lacking, you know, because remember I asked you yesterday the day after Mainoo scored that goal in midweek against who was it?
Wolves.
Against Wolves, when he scored that great goal against Wolves, I asked you, how come he doesn't play 90 minutes more often? You said he doesn't have an engine yet.
Zaire Emery
has an engine. He definitely has an engine. So he already has it all, and he's been proving it, you know. So, but yeah, those are the two guys at the top when it comes to the teenagers that are midfielders in Europe, I think.
I think that's fair. To be fair, I mean, we can't count Jude anymore because he's 20. Unfortunately,
no, Jude is everybody's too old. He's older than Toni Kroos in spirit. Come on, he's an uncle, man. Forget him. Monaco drew at home to Le Havre 1-1. And the result we care about most: Lille hosted Clermont on foot and put a foot up their ass 4-0 before halftime. Coach, two goals from the guy with two first names. I ain't like that, but what'd you see?
So here's the thing. Fonseca, to me, has no choice now at this point but to kind of just let take the handbrake off a little bit. They've kind of got to go for it now, and I think because of the type of coaches and the squad he has now, it's just down to him to keep making them believe, because Lille pretty much can, at home, I think they can beat anyone. They've shown it, and they beat the snot out of Clermont foot, but now it's about really just making sure your home form is on point, because I personally would love to see them in the Champions League next year. I really do. They're one of France's great talent factories, and I'm curious to see how they fare in Europe. Look, they're tied on points with Monaco actually right now, but there's no reason why they couldn't potentially catch up to Nice. They're only 4 points behind Nice. Like, they need to just Fonseca needs to keep making these players believe, for sure. Like, they're not doing as well as I hope they would this season, but he's a great coach regardless, and he's making it work despite the patchy form.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Real quick understandings: PSG are obviously top on 47 points. In second place is Nice on 39. Brest are in third on 36 points. Lille and Monaco, as Coach mentioned, are both tied on 35 points in fourth and fifth. Lawns are sixth, and we don't give a fuck about the rest. Let us move on to our next destination, which finds us in Germany, the Bundesliga. RB Leipzig, they hosted Union Berlin, Coach, and they won 2-0. I think this is just them having the same season they've been having all season, just wildly inconsistent. Last week they lost, this week they won. Goal from your boy Openda and Benjamin Sesko as well.
I know, two strikers that, you know,
I know you love that shit. You love when the strikers
are. Yeah, man. But they're two strikers that I wouldn't mind seeing in North London.
Oh.
So it's, put it like this. Gabby has been a Sesko booster pretty much for as long as I've known him, which is not a long time. But I'm pretty sure I saw him miss a gilt-edged chance, and I think his next chance, I'm pretty sure he put away, or maybe I think he had one before that, but he put away. And that's the kind of thing you want from your striker, that, look, I'm leaving with something regardless. I can miss the easiest chance in the world, but I'm making sure something goes in for me this game. And he's got the attribute. My only one concern is that I just want to see, I want him to start and play more. Like, he has to start. He has to play way more than he is. I know it's hard because Openda is just Openda. Openda is, there's a bit of Romario / Aguero to him. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I see it. Very small, compact, pacey, great finisher. All kinds of finishes, physical. Like he's a problem, man. He's a problem. Like last season, it looked like him and Balogun were equal level players. Yeah. I think he's left
him in the dust now. And I'm not saying Balogun's not great, because Balogun, trust me, is very, very good. But
his time is coming.
Yeah, Openda's approaching that stage where, if things don't work out for Nunez at Liverpool are going to be all over a player like him for sure. Like somebody's going to take a chance on him. It's going to be like the best gamble that they would have made in a while. Like, he could potentially replace Salah's goals. Obviously not his position or whatever, but he could literally replace Salah's goals. That's the kind of level I see him getting to. He's great.
I can't find a reason to disagree with you, to be honest. Yeah. He's a fantastic footballer. Heidenheim hosted Dortmund, and Dortmund probably did enough to win this one, but they didn't score. They had several good opportunities, didn't score, so that one ended 0-0. Freiburg hosted Stuttgart, and Dennis Undav. I can't believe this is the same player I saw at Brighton, because he was fucking terrible in England. But he keeps scoring. Do you think he gets a call-up from Germany for the Euros?
Do you know what? If we're looking at their striking options, okay, so let's count the names that are definitely on the plane in terms of their striking options. Fulkrug, and that's it.
Havertz, of course, even though Havertz as well.
But I was gonna But I was gonna say more that he will he be a striker?
Like striker.
Yeah,
you're right.
So he's got a chance, man. He's definitely got a chance.
I mean, I think it would be malpractice if Nagelsmann doesn't take him. Because they, like I said, they have nothing. So it's like, what do they have to lose? Like, what are you going to do? Take another right back or some shit? Anybody give a fuck?
He's at a good age. He's at a good age as well, man. Like, yeah.
Good shit. Stuttgart 3, Freiburg 1. Great away win for them. Bayern, who said Borussia Mönchengladbach, their bogey team. And for the first time in many years, I don't know exactly how long, they actually managed to win both fixtures against this team this year. You know, and not only that, they had to do it by coming from behind this time. And not only that, they played well for the first time in what feels like forever. Goals from Pavlovic. He's really good. Good discovery for them this season. It's going to save them a lot of money. No need to buy Palinha if you have him. Harry Kane, of course, per usual. And Matthias De Ligt.
Yeah.
And these goals combined to give Thomas Müller his 500th win in a Bayern shirt. That's a lot of wins for one player. Mm-hmm. But on the sad side, they lost Alphonso Davies. He twisted his knee. Are Bayern, should we take this one victory against their bogey team, a team they always seem to mess up against, as them finally clicking into gear? Because it's been kind of shaky all season. They've been winning off quality alone, not cohesion.
I'm going to start a bit backwards here, because I'm looking ahead to their next game, and it's against it's against them.
I gotta book my week about
this. I need to find a pod where we said this is the game week that Leverkusen finally lose. And I just need to find that pod. I need to find the audio for it. But Leverkusen doing it, it's not Leverkusen, sorry, Bayern doing this now kind of shows that, and I'm not looking at Tuchel, it's more about the actual team and the history it has. It kind of shows that this team might be ready to just go on another run again. And Bayer Leverkusen might be the first to feel the wrath of this run. It's set up to be one of the games of the season in Europe, point blank period, because of how well Leverkusen are playing, and because of the fact that there's pressure, there's actually finally pressure on Bayern. This is the best team that Bayern have had to go against the title for in a very fucking long time, man. Like, that's Jesus.
Probably like peak Klopp Dortmund teams, I think.
Rav, maybe? It's been over 10 years.
Like, because even those Tuchel Dortmund teams weren't that great.
No.
I don't remember them being that great. But yeah. Speaking of Leverkusen, they went away to Darmstadt in a top versus bottom battle. And two goals from Nigerian Nathan Tella settled this game to keep their 2-point gap over Bayern intact. But that's the game was second, not going to be open at points, though. Like, was, Darmstadt actually had their moments in this game.
It was. But that second goal from Tella, listen. That's top quality. Like, that's what you expect from a top quality player, basically. You know,
like, so, listen, man, that would not rank among the top, not even goals, top like 10 moments at AFCON this weekend. So he needs to figure his shit out and get on the plane next time and stop wasting his time playing for Xabi Alonso when he can be playing for Jose Peseiro in fucking Cote d'Ivoire. You know, get on the plane, boy. But yeah, Germany, the standings. Obviously, we have Leverkusen at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Bayern right after them. 2 points behind, 50 and 52 points respectively.
Yep.
Stuttgart are in third on 40 points, which is, I suppose, we know who the title race is between at this point, so we really shouldn't be doing this anymore. Dortmund are in fourth on 37. Leipzig are in fifth on 36. And Eintracht Frankfurt, who we didn't mention today, but they lost to Cologne, are in sixth on 31 points.
Yeah.
On we go to our next destination, coach. It's going to be Serie A.
Let's go.
Inter.
Yeah.
Juve. Derby della Madonnina.
Yes.
Big game in Italy every year. Before the game even started, the Inter Ultra sent the Juventus fans a message.
Bars.
A very harsh message. A message filled with bars. A message filled with truths. Coach, I'll let you take away from here because you have that message tattooed on your heart as well, even though you didn't even care about Italy like that.
So the only reason why it means so much to me is I feel like it applies to Chelsea and it applies to City as well, pretty much. that's why it means so much to me. But let me just read it out again. Pardon me. Let me just get it up. But it was referees bought, directors banned, exams fakes, ultras not respected, league titles robbed.
What Give else? It to them.
Chances manipulated. Balance sheets faked, players doped, profits invented, banned in Europe and condemned. God damn. Let me tell you something right now. If somehow I could get one of the TIFO makers in at Arsenal to do this for when we play Chelsea at home, oh, that would be so fucking great. And then if we could do it for when we go City away as well, that would be so fucking great, honestly, man. And you know what would be great about it as well? It would be the fact that they would literally have to, like, the media would literally have to talk about it, because if the cameras are panning to them, like, they're going to have to explain it. Do you know what I mean? They can't ignore it.
Hey, so man, if they see Mikel Arteta doing a fist pump on the sideline, they'll ignore it. They'll focus on that instead.
Yeah.
Don't worry. Don't put it beyond Sky Sports. They'll do anything to push their propaganda and agendas.
That is true.
But back to Italy. Inter were definitely the better team in this game.
Oh, for sure,
they also sent a message to Juve on the pitch. They essentially didn't score a lot. There wasn't a whole lot of goal mall action in this game, but Inter were definitely the better team. You watched more of it than I did, actually.
Yeah, in the second half, though, I think Chesney pulled off two saves that kind of made me miss him at Arsenal a little bit. Like, he pretty much saved it from being an embarrassment. Obviously, it was an own goal from Getty, but the attempted scissor kick, I think, from Pavard that he missed, and Marcus Thuram's presence just essentially forced it over the line. But genuinely speaking, Juve were disappointing because every time they managed to run at Inter's defense, the final action wasn't just that it was bad. It was like the wrong option every time. Whereas on the other hand, when Inter decided to break on them, and they did that a lot, especially in the second half, it was always the right option, but it was just the final finish either was lacking or Chesney saved them, basically. And this is why I'm very Inter got to the Champions League final last season. I'm very, very wary of them in Europe again, because the form they're putting together in the league is only going to translate to me in Europe as well. Teams are not going to want to play against teams. They started Pavard, Acerbi, and Bastoni today. That's not their strongest defense, to my mind. So, yeah, Dumfries. Look, you're bringing up Dumfries off the bench. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? You got De Vrij as well. Inter in general, to me, have sealed the league already, and they're going to be probably now like gearing themselves and, you know, not completely switching off from the league, but they're going to be kind of similar to what City done last season, where they kind of pace themselves a bit better, like for the games in Europe. They're just, to me, to my mind, clearly the best team in Italy. Like, it's so clear.
clearly. They're now 4 points ahead with a game in hand over Juve. So it might be a wrap very shortly. That said, before we move on, I wanted to ask, you know, you mentioned Inter and their, I suppose, their general impressiveness since the since last season, really, making the Champions League final. I feel as if a lot of that depends on, you know, last season it depended on Brozovic. He moved to Saudi. Then they moved Hakan Çalhanoğlu back there. And I remember before the season started, he claimed that as far as DMs go in Europe, as far as deep-lying playmakers go, he said he's top five. When he said it, I kind of raised an eyebrow like, bro, you're more of an offensive player anyway. Like, what are you talking about? But he did some things today, and he's been doing some things all season. And them going away to Fiorentina last weekend and struggling without him kind of had me thinking, like, let me ask Coach what he thinks. How good is Hakan Çalhanoğlu as a deep-lying playmaker?
I will use a very, very good comparison to my mind, and you understand straight away. His name is Ross Barkley, and that's it. That's all that's happened there. Good players, good players that are able, that are good attacking players, that are have made their career playing through the middle, kind of thing, that drop deeper. Often you often do not get a fall off in quality. They just do all the good shit that they can do in the final third just from a deeper place. So
it's easier back there.
It's
a little easier. You got more space back there. All right. Well, Inter running away with it. Next game, Atalanta hosted Lazio, and Charles Di Ketelaere. He is having an excellent loan, man. Like, because that season at Milan last year was shit, but this season at Atalanta is great because he scored a brace against fascism. Atalanta won this one 3-1. Ciro Immobile got the consolation goal for Sarri's men from their only shot on target. Coach obviously did not see this because he never sees Immobile when Immobile does anything. Napoli hosted Verona, and the defending champs needed a late goal from Kvaratskhelia to get a home win in a match that they dominated thoroughly. Good for them. Lecce hosted Fiorentina and won 3-2 in what was probably the game of the weekend in Serie A. This one basically ended in a two-minute stretch of madness near the end. Two late goals, one in the 90th minute and one in 90+2 from Roberto Piccoli and Patrick Dorgu. Patrick Dorgu is of Nigerian descent. Someone should call him, I think. I don't know. I don't know if he's good or not, but he scored this weekend, so someone should call him.
That's what Tosin would say.
Exactly. Frosinone hosted Milan, and Milan beat them 3-2, thanks to goals from Giroud, Gabbia, and Luka Jovic. Mattia Sule, your boy, he's still having a good season, scored a penalty for Frosinone, even though they lost this one. See anything on this one, Coach?
Yeah, well, first of all, Sule's agent's comments this weekend saying he's not going Saudi because he's a serious guy lets you know
God bless that boy and God bless his agent. Serious footballer.
Honestly, we just know he's going straight to the top. Secondly, Giroud's header was just, again, stupendous. And I've banged this drum before. Milan are showing the signs of a team that when Pioli eventually goes, they've got enough there with the right signings to move forward again, because they're doing what they should be this second half of the season, trying to finish as strongly as possible. They're not going to win the league, obviously. They need to be playing Champions League football again next season. And when you have someone like Jovic, who's coming up with winners like this, it seems like things are just going right for you. Like, since he's come back to Italy, I won't lie to you, I have been really impressed with him. I'm actually very happy for him, because that Real Madrid move pretty much killed his career for a couple of years. So
yeah, that didn't go well. That didn't go well at all.
So I'll ask you this. Go on.
Do you agree that, okay, so we talked earlier about Mbappe going to Real Madrid.
Yeah.
The immediate rumor after that was that Rafa Leao replaces him at PSG. Kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you still rate Milan post Pioli if they don't have that guy?
They're going to need to find someone to replace him. And Chukwueze isn't going to be the guy. As much as I do like Chukwueze, you know, Nigerian aside, he's not the same type of player in terms of the capacity that Leao does to just win you shit out of nothing. Who they get, couldn't tell you, man. It's very hard to play like that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. All right, 3-2 Milan win there. Bologna hosted Sassuolo, and we mentioned them because the Joshua Zirkzee watch continues. He continued his Giants Benzema / Ibrahimovic impression by dominating Sassuolo without scoring a goal technically. But he did score the equalizer for them because it was his shot that got deflected into the net. But they count it as an own goal. And just in general, it's as if Thiago Motta has given him the keys to their front play, essentially. Like, everything kind of goes around him. And he didn't set up any goals, but you could, he was just always present on the goals. Like, he was taking attention. People were around him because he's so big. He's kind of like Kai Havertz in that way. Yeah. And, you know, the job was finished by Fabian, Ferguson, and Salamakers. Sassuolo were poor, to be fair. 4-2 went to Bologna.
You know what's funny? I was watching bits of this game, right? And my missus was with me, and I was like, oh, look, this is the guy that everyone at Arsenal, that everyone's talking about Arsenal should sign kind of thing. I was like, but I'm not a fan. And she asked me and I explained to her, but I was like, hold on, she's not going to understand. So I said to her, okay, you're a management accountant, right? What's the most important part about your job? And she was like, it's kind of hard to say, but for example, she's got, the commentary on like her month-end report for like the schedule variance and shit like that, or whatever it is, sorry. I was like, okay, can you imagine? Yeah, you're working with another one that's another management kind of just like you, and they're so, so good at their job, right? But when it comes to their commentary on the variance analysis and on the month end reports, they just can't do it like as well as you, and they don't do it as often as you, kind of thing. How would that make you feel? So then what's the point of them, you know, working with me if they can't do the one thing that nobody else are supposed to do, kind of thing? I was like, that's Joshua Zirkzee. He's like, oh, okay, I get you now. So he's really, really good. He's just not a goal scorer. I was like, yeah.
Amen. Respectfully to your lady, God bless her and her career. And fuck you and your stupid ass analogy. Bring him to the Arsenal. I don't give a fuck about none of that shit you said. Nigga. I actually fell asleep halfway. On to the standings. Inter ahead 4 points with a game in hand over Juve, 57 points to Juventus's 53. Milan are in third on 49. Atalanta are way behind in 39 in fourth. Bologna on 36 points. And Roma have 35 points. They'd probably have only 20 if they still had Mourinho there, but that's neither here nor there. On we go to La Liga, my friend. And we start in Bilbao, where they beat the shit out of Mallorca on Friday with a dominant thrashing. Two early set-piece goals from their left-back, Yuri Berchiche.
Yeah.
And Iker Muniain. I haven't seen him much this season.
I haven't seen him since him and Herrera danced all over Man United in the European League all those years back. Like, fuck me, that was ages ago.
I was going to say, I haven't seen him since I stopped watching The Simpsons, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. But apparently he's like one of those like veteran captains, kind of like Marco Reus now, where he's not really a starter anymore, but he's just there for the culture. But he was wearing the captain's armband as he finished off the scoring in a 4-0 victory over Mallorca. Alaves hosted Barcelona to begin the lame duck Xavi era. And let's call it what it was, coach. It was a professional win, despite Samu Amorodion's best efforts for the home team. Goals from Lewandowski, Gundogan, and Vitor Roque. Their January signing, is he gonna be good?
I don't know that much about him, to be honest, but Gundogan's goal,
I was lucky enough not to see it, because as far as I'm concerned, like, they may have won on paper, but I'm just dreaming about the fact that Xavi got fired by Barcelona. That's hilarious. That's hilarious. They fucked that up so bad.
Yeah.
Like, to talk more, like, we did enough of this last week, but it's just so fascinating to me that they messed this up so badly.
Mm-hmm.
If you hire Xavi when your club is in a financial situation where you're pulling levers left, right, and center, why not just allow him to do what comes naturally to a manager like him and just have him coach a bunch of kids?
Yeah.
Instead, he pulled all these stupid-ass levers, bought all these players he doesn't need. Rafinha shouldn't be there. Lewandowski shouldn't be there. This Vitor Roque kid, no matter how good he's going to be, I don't think that was the right use of their money at this time. They've just wasted so much money when they could have just had him do like a proper rebuild with the talent that was on the contract. And now hopefully they haven't ruined his career, because I don't hate Xavi that much. But they've ruined his career. He's going to have to start over from some other place before, even if he does come back to Barcelona someday, he has to prove himself somewhere else. And a lot of it, I'm not saying he was perfect in that job, but a lot of it was not his fault. It was the bullshit going on above him. He just wasn't a strong enough personality to really hold his ground there. Because if I were him, as I've said before, the minute they interfered with his lineup in that Champions League game away to Antwerp, I would have quit on the spot. No conversation, no discussion, nothing. I'm out. Fuck y'all.
Well, while I don't disagree with most of that, I will say him winning the league last year probably fucked him long term for it. That was I'm not saying this, but of course you should win the league if you've got a chance to win the league. But it's just like, had he had like a steady, you know, season last year, they might have been more patient with him, I think, potentially. Yeah. But the fact that he won the league, like, okay, cool, you're already ready to go now. This year we need to win the Champions League.
And that's a shame. That's a shame that he got plugged with, you know, with the belt that he bought for himself. But yeah, Barcelona 3, Alaves 1. Girona and Real Sociedad played a bit of a board draw, 0-0. Yeah. They're two of the best footballing sides on the planet, but they essentially canceled each other out in a game that I'm pretty sure Jose Mourinho has added to a spank bank instantly. 0-0. Yeah. He loves that kind of shit.
Well, I will say that I think Sociedad probably they tried the strongman thing this game for real. Like,
no, it didn't work for Angola. It didn't work for them, huh?
Yeah, it didn't.
Strongman thing. Now, it's not the tactic is not really reliable, but you know, when it works, it's nice to see. Yeah. Sean Dyche. Real Madrid hosted Atletico Madrid in the Madrid Derby. It ended 1-1. I'd watched most of this game. I think Real Madrid probably deserved to win it. They had the better of the game. They were a little wasteful. Brahim Diaz opened the scoring. He was maybe their best player on the day. But Atletico were better in the second half. Sometimes you wonder if that's game state or not, but they were just better. They had more shots of goal in the second period, and they actually scored a headed goal that was disallowed. And Real Madrid almost snuck through the game, but they ended up conceding a goal to Marcos Llorente, a Real Madrid Academy graduate who got an equalizer in the third minute of injury time, thanks to some confusion between Nacho and Carvajal. It couldn't happen to two nights for guys to be, you know, personally, you know, but I got no beef for Real Madrid, but when I'm hating on Real Madrid, I love to hate on the Los Blancos on the team.
Yeah. Camavinga started in midfield this game, which is...
He looked good.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. They're talking about him potentially going because... I want to say him potentially going, but if you're looking at it for the rest of this season in general, but just the rest of his career, is this his third year now?
At Real Madrid?
I think it's his third year now, and he hasn't actually buckled. He hasn't actually knuckled down to be a first team player. And I get he's still very, very young, but because there isn't anybody else of his profile and his quality, genuinely, he should be one of the players that like Ancelotti relies on. I think, you know, in terms of in midfield, at least Cruz and Modric, for as great as they are, simply just don't have the capacity anymore, and he should go on.
That Cruz and Modric thing is a really interesting case because none of us can say that, you know, like I'm sure they have their internal numbers and they probably know that, oh, they're both sprinting less or whatever. But based on what I've seen with my eyes, at no point have I looked at Cruz and Modric and thought to myself, okay, they're about to be finished or they need to be replaced. Now, granted, Real Madrid has to make that transition regardless because you can't miss out on the upcoming talents. You know, like you can't miss out on Tchouaméni. You can't miss out on Bellingham because you want to prolong Luka Modric's career at age 38, 39, or however the fuck old he is. But honestly, I don't think, and Ancelotti says this every other week, especially about Modric, about how it pains him not to play him more because he's still pretty fucking good. You know, so it's a tricky one. But if they're letting people go, man, if they're trying to sell Camavinga, I have two working kidneys. I will give one to KSE. Bring him to the Emirates. I'm on my knees. Bring him. I mean,
even for Arsenal, like I'm not even sure that works unless we're gonna.
I don't give a fuck. Bring him. What do you mean it doesn't work? Okay. If you have the choice between getting a striker that's not, I mean, there's no really sure thing in the market to me, really. But given the choice between a striker that costs somewhere around 80 to 120 million and getting Camavinga for like 80 million, which one are you taking next summer?
Boy, a striker changes Arsenal's destiny so dramatically.
That's not guaranteed, bro. It's not guaranteed. Camavinga to me is a guaranteed midfield. England? Camavinga?
You've twisted my arm.
We're talking apes in the nursing home, my nigga. Don't even think about this shit, nigga. Like, you're running through these holes, man. We win in the Premier League 20 times, 115 times in a row, nigga. Man, Kamavinga is one of those players that makes me happy on a level that I can't even explain with proper sense, which is why I'm yelling at you, and I apologize for that. Oh, man.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm worried, but I just think for his own career as well, he had all of the great things Real Madrid have done in the last couple years or whatever, right? Kamavinga hasn't been central to it. I'm not saying that they could do it without him kind of thing, but it's not a thing where, like, for example, and I get being an attacking player is easier for your mark to be noticed than to be made, but Bellingham is coming straight away, and Bellingham is automatically undroppable. Like, you cannot drop Bellingham you just can't. And Kamavinga needs to establish that very, very quickly.
Well, is that really even up to him anymore?
This is what I'm saying. Like, that's why for Real Madrid, but also for him as well, he should be probably thinking, I've been here for 3 years now, and I have to be patient. I get it, and I'm still young, but at the same time, Jude is here, and Jude is obviously just undroppable, blah, blah, blah. It's just like, you know, at some point, something's going to give.
I mean, shouldn't the midfield just be Tchouaméni, Kamavinga, and Bellingham?
Yeah.
I just do that and let them figure it out from there. Like, I mean, like, why are they overcomplicating this shit? Like, just play him in his best position. Like, they've gotten some people back from injury. I'm seeing Ferland Mendy a whole bunch, probably more than I'd like to personally. But, you know, don't play the man at left back and just don't waste an asset. But if you're trying to waste the asset, call me. I have kidneys, okay? I'll give you both. I don't care. That's us done in Spain, my friend. Let's do the standings in La Liga. Uno momento. Real Madrid are top with 58 points. Girona, 2 points behind on 56. Barcelona are back in third on 50. Atletico Madrid are on 48.
Mm-hmm.
And Bilbao on 45. Real Sociedad are kind of way back in 37. Round out the European places, but that is it for Spain and La Liga. Coach, you ready for the Super League?
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go to the Super League. Oh man, the Premier League, and we start at Goodison Park, where Richarlison once used to play. Now he plays for Tottenham. I don't really know that Tottenham is a bigger team, but that's neither here nor there. And he scored a brace away to his old team, but Everton never say die. Brantford had a late equalizer in this game. What'd you make of it, Coach?
Well, shout out to Richarlison for not celebrating. I always like to see that in the modern game. I think it's fun. I think it's great. I think it's nice, isn't it? But listen, man, I saw some people talking about, you know, would they take Tottenham's back four over Arsenal's top four? I'm just like, bro, there's no comparison to be had here. There is, man, not a single
scoreboard, nigga. Look at the table. Yeah. That's your answer. Look at the table.
But there's not a single... I mean, Destiny Udogie probably is the best defender that they have. I think he's great.
I like Van
de Ven
too.
Like Van de Ven is sick. Don't get me wrong, sick. But overall, like, he's the only one I look at. I think, do you know what? That left-back spot, do you know what? I'd like him for there, for sure, I think. But apart from that, nah. Romero, I have never rated and I never will. I don't think he's a big, dumb oaf.
I'm mad on him. It just reeks of indiscipline and shit, man. James Maddison came back. How did he look to you?
So James Maddison is another player that I think is
a bitch.
I think Tottenham is literally the perfect club for him, where he can be the big fish in a small pond, but in a sense that, oh, I'm at a club that has some level of expectation, but it's never that much where it's like, oh, if Tottenham don't win anything, they're not going to look to me kind of thing, because it's only Tottenham kind of thing. But Tottenham make enough headlines for me to always be kind of relevant kind of thing. Like, that's why I feel, that's why there's a very, very...
Pick him, Gareth, that shit.
Yeah, basically. And if he doesn't, he's been hard done by, but then again, there's no real expectation there. You know what I mean? It's one of them ones. But yeah, man, look, Tottenham are probably going to pick up form now, because they've got, look, Van de Ven is back, Maddison is back, Richarlison scoring goals. They're going to, you know, go on a run, I think, but it won't be enough. Tottenham are not like, they're not that team.
Fair enough. Shout out Ange, though. I'll give him credit. I really enjoy the fact that he hasn't allowed them to waste £50 million in Richarlison, because he was always a good player. He was just being used the wrong way by the coach that bought him at the club. Was that Conte?
That's a good question. You know, I actually don't know.
In any event, it's nice to see him being used, getting on the end of moves instead of having to like carry the ball and do all that shit that he's not good at. Next game was is this called the M23 Derby? Is it, Coach? The Brighton Crystal Palace thing?
Oh yeah. They just hate each other for no reason, and I don't get it.
Well, Brighton definitely seemed to have a reason to beat the shit out of them because this one was over quickly. It was 3-0 by the 35th minute. Jean-Philippe Mateta got one back for Crystal Palace in the 71st, but y'all, Pedro canceled that one out. He's pretty good. We need to keep an eye on that cat. Like, I know he scores a lot of penalties, but even at Watford, I like the look of him. He just,
well,
he
knows how physical. He's one of those players that I think center backs at the end of the game definitely feel as if they've been through one. They've been through it. Yeah, I do like him for sure.
Yeah, we call those guys ice bath all-stars. You know, you finish playing against them, you definitely take an ice bath. It's not optional. Good for Brighton, though. They've been on a shaky run of form for the past couple weeks, months, it feels like, at this point. And to win a game 4-1 is not a small thing. But do you think Roy makes it to the end of the season?
Oh, that's a good question, man. I mean, look, the fans keep protesting. And I think, put it like this, the fact Eze was already injured, then he brought on Olise, and then Olise didn't even last 10 minutes. I think the count was 8 minutes. Then his post-match was like, well, the medical team said it was fine, basically. I personally don't like, especially with muscle injuries, I never ever, you never rush back muscle injuries, despite what, obviously these guys know a lot more than me, obviously, but I've always felt uneasy about having players on the bench when they're nursing a muscle injury. If it's an impact, I don't know if it's like a dead leg or something like that, different story. But I just feel like it's generally such a risk that's not worth it. And now he's going to be out for much longer time.
Oh, well. He's doing some fucking hip bridges or something, nigga, because this shit is getting old. Like him, Pedro Neto, all these like wingers, man. Can you stay healthy so we can buy you? John Thurio Long. Anyway, 4-1 to Brighton. Newcastle hosted Luton Town, and this was almost certainly the result, if not the game of the weekend, because it ended in a 4-4 draw. I wasn't even paying attention to this because Newcastle scored in the 7th minute before I could turn it on, and I thought to myself, oh, okay, that one's a wrap. Next thing you know, it was 4-2 to Luton. Coach, how much more of this game did you catch? You definitely saw more of it than I did. What did you see?
Basically, Bruno Guimarães was the worst midfielder on the pitch. And Ross Barkley and Sambi both smoked his shit, basically. I will say, though, Newcastle, despite injuries, I feel like Howe is doing a very good job in terms of his coaching. Like, he's actually earning his money, but I can't fucking stand him. You know what I mean?
is it him or is it Jason Tindall?
It's both of them, and it's the club in general as well, to be fair. But Ross Barkley...
You haven't gone pilgrimage yet, bro?
No, hopefully this year, inshallah. But Ross Barkley is showing out so much, and I'm so glad that he's having a great second act in his career, and he's doing it at a club like Luton, because Luton, to be fair, just have never probably had a player of his quality before, like, especially in the modern era. Look, he was a star boy at Everton, he went to Chelsea, he's played Champions League football, he's done all of this kind of thing, and he's really taken, he's not even just like, you know, leading by example, he's going away to these grounds and stuff, and he's taking it by the scruff of his neck, and he's against City, against us, he was soloing both midfields, he was going through both midfields on his own, and he's done the same thing again yesterday. He's pretty much the difference right now between them, you know, staying up and going down, I think. And this isn't disrespect to their strikers and stuff, because their strikers are scoring goals, let's not forget, like, literally Carter Morris and Adebayo both scored yesterday. Like, so they're doing the right things, but he is literally the one that's making it happen. And it's just refreshing to see, man. Like, he is the one man army, if you like, the one man midfield right now.
Well, I'm gonna show some love to Sambi because we thought he was done, but he said
he's doing his thing, man.
Honestly, at a bare minimum, we're gonna get like 20 back for that nigga, you know. So that's cool because I know. Like, it's just his body language. He's never going to have the defensive intensity to make it at Arsenal. Like, he just doesn't have it about him. Like, Mikel will look at him once in the summer and be like, nah, get rich. Maybe he'll go to Burnley because they hosted Fulham and they drew 2-2 thanks to two goals from David Datra Fofana. a player that Chelsea could probably use right now, apparently, because he scored against City last week too.
Yeah, and I mean, home debut, he scored two now. I mean, put it like this, all the hate, not hate, but all the cussing that I was giving Luton, like, pre-season, before season, probably should have saved it for Burnley, because Burnley are the one real ones that are absolute dog shit, and they're the ones that just have crap players all over the place and should be going down. Vincent Kompany, you fooled me, bald bastard. I cannot believe it. There's no hope for Burnley. Burnley are so going down. There's no redemption for them. And I personally cannot wait for them to hand us another 3 points again. You're wasting everybody's time.
Well, you don't see any positives from them coming down from 2-0 down? I mean, like Fulham went up 2-0 against them and they managed to come back.
No.
Because, does it matter?
No, because I'll tell you why I'm being so harsh. Because Vincent Kompany saw the equalizer and didn't even celebrate, really. He walked up the line like, yeah, like, you know, it is what it is. I'm thinking, brother, you need these points. Be fucking excited. Fist pump. Who do you think you are? Like, you're Burnley, bro. I know we're going to look at the table later. Look at the table now. Bro, they have 13 points. Luton are literally 7 points ahead of them with a game in hand, bro.
That's mental to think about. On we go. Sheffield United hosted Aston Villa. That did not end well, man. Unai Emery's men went ham on these niggas, man. It was 4-0 in the first half, and they added one more and just took a nap for the rest of the game. It should have been 20.
Good lord. This is the Premier League game. This could have been a Premier League game where it was the highest scoring game of the season, the random game that nobody watched. Like, it was so relentless. And I mean, the one thing that I want to pick up from this game was, apart from Tielemans' crazy goal, was Douglas Luiz's pass to Ollie Watkins was just dumb. Absolutely dumb. Like, he had no choice but to score from it. so fucking good, man.
Those are the best passes, the ones that tell the recipient what to do.
Exactly.
Like, ball, do this with it. All right, on we move. Manchester United, they won at home 3-0. And what was mostly a good performance, coach?
Yeah.
You talked about this on the United pod already that's out with our friend Imani. But was there anything else you wanted to add? Because I just kind of stopped watching when it went 2-0 up, because I was like, you know what? I can't watch them ruin themselves again. No. I can, but it had something to do, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay, so I said before, those of you that are eagle-eared listeners, if you like, I don't know. I've said before that there's no way Rashford should be getting his chain snatched and playing out of position for Garnacho. This is United's best front three. Rashford, Hoyland, Garnacho, that's your best front three. You play that most weeks. That's what you should be playing. Rashford is going to Rashford. Hoyland is the one. They have a striker. Like, United have a striker that's going to score goals. And Garnacho is a little shit who's going to steal celebrations but score goals as well. It's pretty much the classic Man United attack. All three huge athletes in terms of their capacity to run into big spaces consistently and kill you on the counter. Now they need to get a midfield behind those guys, because they're going to call, like, it's a young, well, it's still a young, well, Rashford brings up the average age, but it's still a young front three. But they're all super duper fast on the counter. I don't know who the fastest. It's probably Hoyland, but again, who knows? On another day, it could be Rashford. Like, who the fuck knows? That's a great problem to have.
All chest, no legs, fucking run into space shit. It might work against dumbasses like West Ham, but it's not taking you to the promised land. So, well, I ain't scared. But good for you for winning this weekend. Good for them.
We're still hearing about Lissandro's injury, which is, yeah.
I was going to ask about that. What does that say for the, you know, because I thought because we're getting all their players back that they're going to have a nice run. But there was one guy I figured they couldn't afford to lose. Mm. Their back five, the guy they could have least afforded to lose, in my opinion, was Lissandro. And now they've lost again, and it looks bad. So
Ten Hag said it's not looking good, basically, and it's bad for him. It's bad for the team. I was like, damn, that is ominous. Fuck, yeah.
Because it was the point where Ten Hag had humbled himself enough to actually play him with Maguire, which he had refused to do for years at this point. Yep. You know, and it's a shame. I feel bad for the guy because he just came back from metatarsal injury and now his knee is gone. Man, that's a shame.
It was a freak accident as well. It's just bad, man.
Shame. Chelsea.
This is what we call.
Let's talk about these niggas, man.
This is what we call blood of my enemies. Literally, I am every time Chelsea, which for it's been like what two? It's been 2 years of this. Every time they do something like this, I am. What's the word you use, Dean? Tumescent. Is that the word?
Yes,
bro. It is. It's wonderful. It gives me what they call endorphins, if you like. Cunha banging a hat trick on your head at home is no. Cunha is a great player, by the way. I think he's really, really good. It's no disrespect. It's just that in the context it happened, we have to remember this is a £2 billion squad. This is a £2 billion. Like there is, I don't care whatever the context is. You shouldn't be on a run like this. This is the, to me, right, and a lot of Chelsea fans started supporting Chelsea for whatever reason, right? But they're probably thinking, yeah, this shit is sweet, man, and like you know. We can spend as much as we like and we'll get it right eventually, even if things might not go right for a season kind of thing. Chelsea are now reaping the rewards of seeing everybody else have money and realizing they're not that special. Quite literally, that's what it is. You thought you were special all this time and now, I don't know, Wolves can literally buy a player like Cunha for, what, 30 million kind of thing. You thought that what that kind of thing was only available to you? No, everybody can do it now. So what now? Now the playing field's been evened. What separates you from everybody else now? Do you know what I mean? Like that's what it is, unfortunately. And it's probably gonna remain this way for a little bit because despite them having some good young players and a good-ish core, everybody else that's ahead of them currently are actually in a way still building themselves anyway. So when are you going to usurp these guys if they're still kind of building their way back to something as well?
Okay, so, I know this isn't your ministry because you hate Chelsea. I hate Chelsea because we're human, not because we're Arsenal fans. If you had to fix Chelsea, what's the first step? Tomorrow, on Monday, you're the sporting director at Chelsea. One of their two sporting directors, because them niggas, they always got to do extra.
I'd buy this is gonna sound crazy because how much money they spent on center backs, but I'd buy two new center backs and a goalkeeper straight away.
Okay.
They've got a goalkeeper. Okay, you tell me who the goalkeeper.
Be that as it may, is Pochettino the one you're going to trust with those new purchases? Do you think he has done enough for what he has? Is basically my question.
Well, they've got to a final. So they're in the Carling Cup final. I know it's crazy, right?
What? Yeah. Don't talk about that on this show. Shut the fuck up, bro.
Okay. Fair enough.
You think he's doing a good enough job then? Because
no, not really. Not really, to be fair. But okay, can you tell me who played in goal for Chelsea today?
The kid from MLS, Djordjevic. I know this because you know we do an MLS show and I'm a Chicago Fire fan. So
okay. I quite literally had never heard of this guy until I don't know, last week.
Fair enough.
Chelsea have so many problems in that goalkeeping position. I didn't even know I didn't even know a Petrovic existed, bro. They just spawned him out of nowhere.
It's not Petrovic, nigga. Goddamn. Is it Petrovic? That's his name now?
Yeah, Petrovic, bro.
I thought it was like Djordjevic or some shit like that. You know, whatever. It was a
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. They're in trouble, man. They're in trouble because I'm just excited to see them not make Europe and not have that income stream. Mm-hmm. And have all these fucking 8-year contracts.
Yeah.
And you know, last summer we were kind of expecting shit to go crazy, but some teams like Arsenal decided to bail them out a little bit, buy some players for some good money. I think the other teams should just collectively decide not to deal with Chelsea and just let them just hoist themselves on their own.
Let them get what they should have got 20 years ago when they were going into administration. That's what everyone should let happen. Like, let history quit itself.
Then you pick up, you know, Mushrik on a discount. You know, like they paid 80, you offer 20. You know, they gotta take it as they're getting relegated.
Pick up Enzo, who you know is not even half to play up Rice, so he can learn off Rice.
Huh? Enzo, would you like that?
Yeah, I'll take Enzo for him to carry Rice's boots and give him his bib, and I'd take that for sure. You know.
Oh man, Wolves won this one 4-2. At Stamford Bridge. Shameful. You people disgust me, Chelsea fans. Bournemouth won. Nottingham Forest won. This one was notable to me. I didn't see much of it for the tackle that Philip Billing put in on Callen Hudson-Odoi. Mm-hmm. Like, how can you stomp on a man's Achilles like that after the man already tore his Achilles? Like, Kilo D, like, can we be professional? Like, if you're going to trip someone on a professional foul to stop a breakaway, like, you clip his leg from the side. You don't stomp on someone's leg from behind. That was so shameful. Did you see anything to this, coach?
I didn't, unfortunately. I didn't know.
Well, that's not our fault. These teams just don't have the star power. On we go. I don't feel bad about that. The final game for this round of fixtures is Brentford hosting Man City, which seems straightforward on paper, but Brentford has always given City a good game since they came up to the Prem. I remember right before the Qatar World Cup, Ivan Toney going to the Etihad and stunting on these niggas. I think that was a 3-1.
They gave them last season in the league. Like, they gave them the work. So, yeah.
So that could be entertaining. So don't miss that one tomorrow, Monday. But the final game that happened already was Arsenal hosting Liverpool. And if you're a fan of the feed, you should already see the Arsenal pod in advance of this pod. But that said, coach, there were a bunch of us on that podcast, and you maybe didn't get to say a thing or two that you wanted to get in. I noted that we didn't give Khedira enough credit.
Yeah,
I thought he was actually pretty fantastic when he came on. Like, the second week, he was really good. He should have scored, right? He should have scored. And that's not something you say about a lot of left-backs who happen to be center-backs that are playing at left-back.
Yeah.
You know, so good for him. I like the new skin fade Khedira. Not only that, he kicked the shit out of Harvey Elliott. I enjoyed that. It was just a version of balance that I kind of like, you know. No one got hurt, but it was very painful.
I mean, I had flashbacks of last season at Anfield when Gabriel should have made it 3-1. When Khedira had that chance at 2-1, I was like, shit, Liverpool are going to get one more chance, aren't they, kind of thing. But we didn't, thank God. But yeah, I swear there wasn't, if you listen to Arsenal, there wasn't much that, you know, that I didn't say that I said that I didn't want to, that I missed out on, should I say, sorry. But the reaction from these pundits is just, at this point, it's just ridiculous now.
Like, it's professional jealous.
It is, but at the same time, I mean, Carragher changing his display pick to Odegaard. You have to understand, football isn't the way it used to be. And in a way, for a lot of reasons, it's a good and bad thing. But I want to focus on the positives. We need this personality. We need people. We need to be seeing things that we haven't seen before. Like, go on.
Here's my thing. It all just reeks of hypocrisy to me. Because I feel like all this stuff has happened at clubs like Liverpool for years. We've seen Jurgen Klopp do all kinds of celebrations and no one criticizes it. But when it's Arsenal, it's a problem, you know, because we've now gotten to this point where the media landscape has changed so much that we basically have people being fans in the commentary booth, in the analysis booth, where people are just straight up fans. Like, there's no expectation of neutrality anymore, which is ridiculous because these are the people that set the narratives that people go on the internet and go into barbershops and argue about. People say Arteta is somehow poorly behaved because he's a passionate coach that lives and dies with every ball and celebrates goals like people celebrate goals when the goals go in. You know, these people are just jealous because they don't have the spot that he has. They want to be high-profile coaches running the big teams in England, and it's never going to happen for them because they've been found out. Gary Neville went to Valencia and failed. Steven Gerrard is in Saudi Arabia. Wayne Rooney, I had hope for you, but, you know, you know, their mates are shit. They don't have a chance of getting these jobs, and they're just hating on somebody that's shining on the job that they want. That's basically what this boils down to me, because it doesn't make sense that every time it's like Arsenal isn't, you know, when Arsenal isn't playing well, it's tactical issues or they need to buy somebody. Then when we play well and we win, it's that we're celebrating too much and our coach is an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
For what? For fist pumping once or twice? These people are jealous. They're fucking jealous of them. That's what it is.
Yeah. And I think just speaking about Arteta and the type of person he is, right? I think he changed a lot from a player to a manager. He was a lot more reserved, I think, as a player. A lot more reserved. And I feel like he recognizes the demands of the job, and I feel like he's had to adapt his personality a little bit. Because as a player, I couldn't see Arteta ever acting like this, genuinely, as a player. But now it's like he recognizes, look, I've got a young team. I'm a young coach as well. I have to kind of have to bounce it off each other's energy. Like, I can't, it's different. Obviously, different coaches have different approaches, but for him, it's working for him because he's at an age where he can do that. He's not going to run up and down the touchline and pull a hamstring like Klopp did last year. Arteta could probably go and play in flipping the thingy league, the what do you call it, in a bit of non-league football and be okay. Do you know what I mean? Like he's still of that physical ability, but
he'd be killing the randos during the training videos, man.
Yeah. There we go. So there's they're not understanding that. Look, Arteta isn't like all these other coaches. Arteta is still pretty much, you know, he didn't finish playing not that long ago. Still, if you really want to think about it, he 15-16 season. It hasn't even been 10 years since he retired from football. Right. So, you know, these guys just they aren't getting it, or maybe they do and they're choosing not to. But
jealous. They're jealous. That's what it is. Like, I'm tired of this shit. How often can you repeat the same baseless arguments about somebody? Mm.
That's
like
true.
For what? Like, and watch what happens. Like, one day Mikel Arteta will win another trophy because he's super Natsu. Then they won't have anything left because they'll stop talking about this stuff when he wins. Because when you're a winner, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Clearly,
that's just how it goes.
Yeah.
All right, coach. I think that's us for today. Anything else for the people?
No. Apart from, we'll be back with AFCON with a preview on Tuesday. Expect to hear that on Tuesday, I believe. But yeah, you guys have got 3 pods to get through over this weekend. So yeah, enjoy.
Get started, people. As always, like this stuff, share this stuff, and we appreciate you. Have a wonderful start to your Black History Month. And whether you Black, white, Puerto Rican, Haitian, stay Black.
Stay Black.
The people, peace, coach.
I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got no way to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Plantation.